manner of his death. But then, he had not been truly human for a very long time. Not far away, on the rubble-littered remains of what had been a building site, something very strange happened. There was a wheezing, groaning sound, and suddenly a square blue police box materialized out of thin air, light flashing dizzily on top. Inside the police box, things were stranger still. There was a large, brightly lit, ultra-modern control room. In the center was a many-sided control panel, its surfaces covered with a complex array of knobs, switches, levers, and dials. From the size of the control room, it was clear that the police box must be bigger on the inside than on the outside. Around the center console stood an oddly assorted group of people. The oldest was a man who appeared to be somewhere in his 60s, though in reality he was very much older. He wore check trousers, a frock coat, and a long black tie. He had flowing white hair and a proud, imperious face with more than a touch of ruthless cunning. The three others were more ordinary in appearance. There was a young man and a young woman, both somewhere in their 20s, and a dark, pretty girl in her teens. All three were casually dressed in the clothes worn on Earth in the last part of the 20th century. The young man was called Ian Chesterton, the woman, Barbara Wright. Once, though it seemed a very long time ago, they had both been schoolteachers. Led by their curiosity about Susan, the youngest member of the party, then one of their pupils, they had followed her home. To their amazement, they had discovered that she appeared to live in this police box with a mysterious old man known only as the Doctor, who she said was her grandfather. They had been even more astonished to find themselves inside the police box and to discover that it was a kind of space-time ship called the TARDIS, a name formed from the initial letters of time and relative dimensions in space. Then had begun a series of terrifying journeys through time and space. The TARDIS had many extraordinary qualities, but accuracy of steering did not appear to be one of them. The Doctor's attempts to return them to their own time and place resulted only in an incredible number of unplanned arrivals, sometimes on alien planets, sometimes on Earth, though always at completely the wrong period. They had seen many wonders and undergone many strange adventures. Such is the adaptability of the human spirit that they had now adjusted to a life of space-time travel. Though they still hoped to see 20th century Earth again, their old life had begun to seem more and more like a dream. Now the TARDIS had made yet another landing. They were all waiting with mingled anticipation and apprehension to discover what lay ahead this time. Moreover, to the Doctor's extreme annoyance, they were all being rather sceptical about his assurance that they were back on Earth and in the 20th century. "Let's take a look on the scanner," suggested Ian practically. The Doctor switched on, and they all peered into the viewing screen. The picture was dark and fuzzy, like an old TV set in a poor reception area. "Oh, dear. Oh, dear. It's not clear," said the Doctor peevishly. "It's not clear at all." He glared at them accusingly, as if it were all their fault. "I wonder where we really are," said Ian thoughtfully. Barbara sighed. "Oh, somewhere quiet and peaceful, I hope." She knew from bitter experience that the TARDIS never seemed to take them anywhere safe. Susan gave her a quick smile. "Yes, we could all do with a holiday, couldn't we?" Barbara peered at the murk on the scanner. "I can't see anything." Ian looked over her shoulder.